Good morning, everyone. Talk Radio 930 WTAD. I think this is the third Tuesday, and that means that Dr. Brandon Breening is here. He practices at the Franklin Total Wellness Center, and he is a doctor of chiropractic. And if you hear a little coos in the background, that is his three-year-old son, Gus, who has been, I've given him every dachshund stuffed animal I have. I've got everything I can, every toy I've got. So hopefully he'll be able to...
Coos or screeches or whatever.
amuse himself. Welcome, Dr. Brandon.
Good morning.
I recently had a little health scare of my own, and just because I know it's bad for me, I gave up all artificial sweeteners. Aren't you proud of me?
I'm very proud of you.
You never thought it could happen,
yeah.
Did you? It's very interesting, though, because I do crave, you know, I want diet sodas, and I want to put... I've had to give up coffee because I put so much artificial sweetener and creamer in my coffee that without that, I can't drink coffee. So,
yeah.
So the caffeine wasn't hard to kick. That was only a two-day headache.
Yeah.
But I still crave that artificial sweetener, but that's pretty much most people agree that that's bad for you. Now, it's kind of intriguing. Ever since the advent of diet drinks, we've gotten fatter and fatter. So it may be better for us just to have some sugary drinks every once in a while as a sometime treat than to have
diet drinks all the time. Well, there's zero calories. Yeah.
Yeah, but the problem is, don't they set you up to crave even things more sweeter?
That's what the studies have been showing, yeah, mm-hmm. that you actually it gives you that sugar high without the sugar satisfaction. So you continue to want it more and more.
Okay. Well, hopefully someday I'll get over my cravings. It's kind of like quitting smoking. I've never smoked, but I've had people say 5 years after they've quit smoking, if they get a whiff of a cigarette every once in a while, they still want one.
It takes 3 to 5 years to truly change a habit.
Are you kidding me? I thought you could do it in 21 days.
Well, you know, you can get pretty good in 21 days, but it's easy to, and, you know, I'm no psychologist, but I listened to a psychologist once who talked about this, and he had told me, and told everybody that was there, he wasn't just talking to me. That because he had done our weight loss program and he was coming up on 5 years out and he was noticing himself getting back into bad old habits. And he's like, I guess I really hadn't completely changed. So he talked about how it takes 3 to 5 years to truly, truly change a habit. And it's not really changing it so much as replacing it with something.
Right. Because you're going to have a habit, you just have to replace it with something more healthy.
Right.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to give you a little update that I've been aspartame free for 4 weeks now. And
Grandma would be so proud of me.
Yeah. Every time we go somewhere and I'd throw my six pack of Diet Pepsi in the backseat, get that poison out of my car. Shut up, you old bat. Just loving commentary
yeah.
So you come by today, as you do, on the third Tuesday of every month, and I don't know what you want to talk about today. So you're the man with the plan. So what is our topic today that you can enlighten our listeners about something in the healthcare field?
Well, March is Brain Trauma Awareness Month. So I thought we would talk about brain traumas and some things we can do to help get that better and that sort of thing. And, you know, just some of the stuff that I'm studying for my diplomate test in... October 4.
Wow. Okay.
It's coming up fast. 3 years of work.
3 years of work, but if you pass the test, you'll be a diplomat.
A diplomat, yeah.
Okay. With brain injuries and neurology as your focus.
With functional neurology, yeah. So, you know, that is, functional neurology covers everything. It covers, you know, people with migraines. It covers people with brain injuries. It covers all sorts of things.
Well, let's talk about brain injuries because... this is the kind of thing that could happen to any of us in a moment's notice. A car accident, a fall off a ladder, a stroke.
Yeah.
But, you know, young, healthy people who are, you know, don't wear their seatbelts or don't wear a motorcycle helmet are involved in an accident and they get what's called a closed head injury, which means basically that your brain swells up so much that it just explodes internally because it can't get out of your skull and it leaves you with a lot of brain damage. Now, a lot of people say, well, that's pretty much permanent. Some therapies can help, but that's pretty much permanent. So what are some of the therapies and help that can be given to people who've already suffered a brain injury.
Yeah. So it depends on what you really need is someone to evaluate where the injury is. Different parts of our brain do different things. Like our frontal lobe is responsible, which surprisingly enough is in the front of your brain. They actually named something with where it's supposed to be. The frontal lobe is responsible for executive function. So doing difficult problems, problem solving, walking and chewing gum at the same time. If your frontal lobe is out, you're not going to be able to do that sort of thing. Your temporal lobe has some speech elements in it. That's why you get people after they've had a stroke, because it's a very common area for blood vessels to have issues in. So they'll get a stroke and they won't be able to talk right. Stuff that comes out as garbage. They can understand you perfectly, or they get the reverse of that. They can't understand you at all, but their words sound great, you know. So,
but is there a way to reverse that?
It depends on where it's at and when it happens.
Okay, we have to take a small commercial break right now while Dr. Brandon attends to his son. And oh, do you just have to do one quick thing?
Go.
Oh, okay, he fixed it. He fixed it immediately. So, but I mean, once that's damaged, I know the brain is so plastic and so flexible that we can often learn different things in different parts of our brain. And amazingly, a friend of mine who was a speech therapist said that when you lose your ability to talk, you don't lose your ability to sing. And so some people can communicate by singing.
Yeah.
When they can't talk. They make up lyrics to a tune that they know. And Old MacDonald Had a Farm can be, make me up some bacon and eggs. You know, so they can actually communicate, but in a very different way, because that pathway to speech was lost, but not to singing.
Yeah. And, you know, it happens early. If you haven't, say you're a 2 year or a one, let's go a 3 month old, and you have a hemorrhage or whatever in the area of speech where we would normally associate speech, and that area, it dies, it will often relocate to the other side of the brain in those people, and they will speak fine.
The younger the injury,
the easier it is. Now, what we do with functional neurology is usually there are parts of your brain that are nearby that work well, and they will sometimes pick up the load. So we train those areas to pick up the load. We train those areas. As long as you've got the functional path to get up there, we can usually help to improve some of the things. Now, let's say that... let's say you've got foot drop, okay? If we didn't get to it early enough, we're not going to fix foot drop. But what we can do, there are cross-cord things that happen. Sometimes we can make it so it's a little bit easier to walk, even without your brace. Not always. It just depends on what neurology is still intact and what isn't. But there's a lot of hope out there, and, you know, at least get it looked at. If you're, the worst thing that they say is, no, I can't help you. You're stuck with the way you are.
Right. So. I think that's the key about chiropractic. A lot of people are reluctant to seek a chiropractor. And then maybe they go as a last resort. You should really go there as the first resort, because if they can't help you, and they will recommend that you have surgery or you go to a medical doctor for treatment, but at least give it a whirl, because you never know how it might help you. And this is good for people with children born with cerebral palsy, anybody that has any kind of, you know, brain malfunction, and that can happen at any time in our life. The sooner you try to recreate a pathway through living tissue, bypassing that dead tissue, the better off you are at your chances of success.
Right, right. And
so what kind of success do you see? Obviously, it's kind of like saying if you're paralyzed, from your neck down and you get a little bit of feeling back, that's success. If you jump up and start running the marathon, that's pretty
miraculous. That's a miracle.
That's not you. That's God. But so what kind of practical success, without giving away, you know, patient confidentiality, what kind of practical success have you seen working with this functional neurology?
So the practical success I usually see, because I don't, right now, I don't get the severely injured. The person who, the Carrick Institute, who I take the classes through, he used to work with coma patients, and he'd wake up coma patients doing certain functional neurology things that he would see a pathway, and he would activate on that pathway, and sometimes they'd wake up, and sometimes they wouldn't. The medical community had given up on them. You know, they were right. They were coma. That was it. That's all we can do for them. We'll keep them there. With me, what I've seen is people with decreased brain function. So they had a concussion, and we before that they didn't have any trouble keeping all their tasks in their head, and they didn't have any trouble figuring out, all right, this is what I'm going to do next. And so what we do is we give them, those people generally have a frontal lobe problem, so we give them specific things that target specific areas of their frontal lobe in order to increase that activity. And, you know, I don't have 100% success rate.
Right.
It's not successful all the time, but let's say that, we'll give away a little secret here. So, let's say that I see a problem with the frontal lobe. One super easy thing that we can have people do is walk and count every other number out loud, because you're doing two things at once, and that improves that frontal lobe. So we get that frontal lobe up, we get more blood to there, we get more oxygen to there, we're rebuilding, regrowing cells, getting them the activation that they need, because the way neurons work is if you don't use them, you lose them.
So you're exercising the brain by doing something
right. That
people say, well, what does that have anything to do with the fact that I got knocked out during football practice? But counting 1, 3, 5, 7 while doing another task is helping to flood that area with blood and with energy and helping you possibly.
And for some of these people, you wouldn't believe how difficult it is. You know, we get some people, and one of the things I have people do is I have them walk down the hall and do something else at the same time. And as soon as they start doing something else, they start falling over. So there are other areas of their brain that are affected. But they just can't, their brain can't handle all that load.
So if you can't walk and chew gum at the same time, you need to see Dr. Brandon.
Well, that may be something developmentally early, but we might be able to work with some things.
Well, I think the most important thing is, you know, you mentioned concussions. I do worry sometimes that we don't get treatment for ourselves early enough. I've been guilty of this. You know, we always joke about, you know, take it to Hillbeans. Everybody's worried about their car after a wreck, you know, and we want our car to be restored fully, but then we walk around with a, you know, twist in our neck or a pain in our shoulder, and we don't think, oh, that'll just work itself out. You never say to your car, I'm going to park you in the driveway tonight. Now, when I come back in 3 days, that bumper better be back just the way it was. You know, no, we take it to Hillbeans. So sometimes, you know, when kids play sports especially, I think it's really important that they have regular checkups to make sure that there isn't something that's possibly happened.
And the state has done a lot to do a lot better job with concussions. We're miles from where we were when I was in high school even. Mm-hmm. But what they don't do is a lot of the afterwards stuff. You know, they do a great job of getting that brain rested and getting it back to where it can be okay. But sometimes they're, and not always, you know, everybody's different. Some people, you rest them and they heal perfectly. But sometimes you rest them and they can't do math anymore.
Right. The part that died didn't get any exercise while they were resting.
Yeah, and it may not necessarily be dead. Right. It may just not be working right. It may not be getting the blood flow that it needs because your brain is put priorities elsewhere.
Okay.
We kind of forget what an incredible thing our brain is. This is something that knows exactly how many red blood cells are in your body right now, exactly how much oxygen to exchange in order to keep you well oxygenated.
And we don't have to think about
it. We don't have to think about any of it.
What are those called? Automatic reflexes or automatic responses?
Autonomic.
Yeah. Autonomic. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Dr. Brandon, as always, we learn a lot whenever you come by, and it's always something to think about. Improving our health means be careful what you put in your body, and if you have any damage to your body, sometimes it's not preventable. You get in a car accident or whatever, and you take a knock to the head, or you get a heavy blow to one of your joints or limbs, you need to be put back together. So Franklin Total Wellness Center is where you practice, and good luck as you continue your training for this diplomat in, what is it called?
Functional neurology.
Functional neurology. Is there such a thing as dysfunctional neurology? I guess you're trying to fix that,
there's regular neurology where you go and they do a great job of diagnosing people with, they look for pathologies.
Right.
You know, the neurologist looks for pathologies. I look for dysfunctional areas that can be improved. They're not dead. They're not a pathological
problem.
They're not
quite dead yet.
You will be.
But you will be. Okay. Well, Dr. Brandon, thank you so very much. If you can tear the young one away from all the toys and games.
See what we can do.
Apparently, my pink dachshund poodle mix was rejected for some reason as unworthy of being played
with. He wants the heart. He just wants to take that
part.
And the fuzzy hair.
You can't have it.
Are you here by yourself?
Good morning, everyone. The Mary Griffith Show, second act underway. And as my guest just asked me, yes, I am here by myself, except for him, you gorgeous hunk. And for Katie Croucher, we are back, and we're talking to award-winning, best-selling author of Bettyville, George Hodgman, born and raised in Paris, Missouri, and lived for 25 years in New York and was very much part of the literary scene there with magazines and books. And then, like many people, a story that touches many listeners in the WTAD audience, my husband's story, many people's story, coming back to the hometown to care for the ailing and elderly parents. And that is a major change in your life, George Hodgman. So welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're going to talk about the book Bettyville. But first, let's describe what happened. You were successful, you're living in New York, everything's going fine, and then the call comes from home.
Well, yes, I was in New York. I was lucky because I had worked all my life in magazines and book publishers, but I had lost my job and I was doing freelance, so I could come home.
So
and,
it
was my mother's 90th birthday,
oh, wow.
And I came home for her birthday, and of course, I'd watched her pretty closely, but she had really, you know, gone downhill, and she'd lost her driver's license. And we had an agreement that she could not, she could only drive to church and the grocery store and bridge club in Paris. But she went AWOL and went to Moberly and had a little fender bender and lost her driver's license. And she didn't tell me that. So she was... There's a sweet lady who comes and cleans our house every once in a while. And she was driving her crazy, making this woman take her everywhere, and was trying to make her take her out so she could practice and take her driver's test again. And, of course, I didn't find out all of this until I was about ready to go back to New York. And so I stayed. You know, I was going to stay for a little while. And we talked about assisted living and... she didn't really, I mean, she didn't want to go. And if you knew my mother, she really didn't, she wasn't a person you could really convince of things. I have a feeling you might be a little bit like that too. And, she's a very strong woman, very strong-willed. And so I just wound up staying, and it kind of, I don't know, I think it was about 4.5, 5 years, and she, you know, had a lot of problems,
right.
Dementia, cancer, and
but you
passed
were there
away.
For her. We were there for her. And it's kind of
and
intriguing.
She was there for me.
Yeah. It's very intriguing because a friend of mine lost her job very unexpectedly, but it was at a time when her father needed her, and she was able to provide that full-time caregiving. So sometimes the world just works out. And from that beautiful experience...
Not that often.
Well, yeah. But from that beautiful experience of caring for your mother as she, you know, declined, but I'm sure it was a great chance to be a different kind of son, because how old were you when you moved away from Paris, Missouri?
18.
Yeah. So yeah. The things you talk about with a 90-year-old mother are much different than, as a grown man, are much different than things you talked about with your mother as a teenager, I'm sure.
Well, yeah, and but it was also the things that I did in Paris, Missouri, and was called to do. I mean, I had lived on takeout meals for 25 years, and my kitchen is about the size of the area where you are right now.
The typical New York kitchen, one inch by 1 inch.
And, I mean, I think I vacuumed about once a year, whether I needed it or not. And so I was called to do, I mean, in New York, if you go to the grocery store, if you go to the neighborhood grocery store, it's called, they call it a bodega. You know, they're very tiny, and they practically, I mean, things are jammed in. So for me, a lot of things that people take for granted, like going to a supermarket, were very, very new. And but you wouldn't think somebody could screw up going to a supermarket, but I did, and it took me a long time to find things, and I had to cook, and I had to, a big thing with my mother was taking her to get her hair done.
Yes.
And
the ladies, well, they never want to not have their hair done, no matter how sick they are.
I think that if you can look in the mirror, if you have dementia, you look in the mirror and you can recognize a person who's there, it really, really helps. And yeah. If you look in the mirror and it's scary, like I am right now, you know, no. it doesn't help. So
you were doing all these things and you were freelancing, so you were supporting yourself in a way, but you were removed from the New York scene.
Yeah.
Did you travel back and forth a little bit, or was it just Paris, Missouri, constant attention to your mom there for a pretty prolonged period of time?
It was. So I went back. I thought that I was going to go back a lot more than I did, and you know, because I kept my apartment. And
oh
but
my
I,
gosh!
I only went. I would say I went back two or three times a year, and but not very often.
Well, you kept the rent. You kept paying rent in New York. Wow.
Well, I would find people to stay for a little while, and during the winter, you can always find a suburban person who doesn't want to
go and drive to Connecticut every day through the snow. Yeah. So you managed. Now, when did the book Bettyville? When did Bettyville come into your mind as, wow, this is kind of an experience I'm having. Maybe I should write about that. Was that something that you came to very quickly, or was it even as after your mother passed?
No, it was during, because I, for one thing, it was very, very hard to keep up the freelance, because I kind of need to be in New York to find people to do work for, and also, I needed something I could do.
Get back on your microphone.
I needed something. Oh, get back on. yes, ma'am. You know, my mother got up at 9 o'clock in the morning, so I needed something that I could do from about 4 or 5 in the morning till 9 to make some rent money. And I had written a couple of scenes, and then this woman came to visit us, and I hadn't seen her in like 30 years, hadn't missed her. But she hadn't seen us together for a very long time. And she said, "You all are so funny together." And at that point, I was carrying around my scenes, and I don't know why exactly. I wasn't planning to write a book. I was, in a way, just writing some things down because I wanted to remember them, you know. And I thought, oh my gosh, we could be this kind of quirky comedy team.
Mm-hmm.
And it would make this book different than all the books that are, I always say, you know, most of the books about caretaking are about an angelic daughter taking care of an angelic mother. And so we weren't like that. And
nobody wants to read that.
And, well, and so I realized that it could be, it didn't have to be sad or just like kind of conventionally sentimental, that we could we could be as mean as we are. And we could be real, you know, and it could have humor and it could be quirky and more like an independent film than a Hallmark Hall of Fame or something.
Right. Where the ending is known because everybody has a finite place on this planet, but where, you know, people go through stages. And I know that when my father was sick, and it was kind of a long, slow decline over many years, we got really close because I had to take him to all his doctor's appointments down in St. Louis. And so you get a chance to talk, and you're a grown-up, and they're a grown-up, and... You know, you're not hiding things from them anymore too much. I mean, there's still things, I'm not going to talk with my dad about. But, I mean, by and large, it was very interesting because he wasn't really, you know, he wasn't telling me that he never did those things when he was a child. He was always perfect and behaved, you know. You get to the truth of the fact. And you get to know people as an adult. It's a very different experience, a relationship with parents as adults than it was with children. And also you have anyone who cares for a parent also goes through the fact that in many ways they become the child then, and you have to be the one that's kind of telling them, no, you have curfew. No, you can't drive to Moberly to go to the supermarket or whatever. By the way, what market did you shop at? I'm just curious. Was it CNR? What was the big... What's the big market for
Hickman's IGA?
Hickman's
Paris,
IGA, yes, okay.
Owned by Roger Heron. Go there.
Yeah, it's a great place.
I sound
absolutely.
Like Kellyanne Conway. but yeah, it's a really good store.
It's a really good store. My guest today is George Hodgman, the best-selling author of Bettyville. He'll be making a free speech Saturday, March 25th at 2:00 in the afternoon at the Quincy Public Library, and it's a memoir about the challenges and triumphs of the son returning to his hometown of Paris, Missouri, to care for his aging mother. It says here in the, it says the devoted son. Were you really devoted, or were you just guilted?
I was devoted.
Okay.
I, you know, it sort of goes along with what you were talking about, getting to know each other as people,
mm-hmm.
and not just capital M mother.
Right.
You know, and I liked Betty. I liked her, and I liked her better when she was old than any other time because, no, it wasn't that I didn't right. like her before because I loved her, but I loved her for her guts, and I loved her because she wouldn't give up, and I also really just, she was funny. She didn't know she was funny, but she was, and... Like at one point she said, I always tell this because it didn't make it to the book, but we were talking about heaven, whether or not there was a heaven, and she said, I don't care as long as they don't put me near Nixon. and she just, you know, and she didn't want to be a bother. She just tried so darn hard. Mm-hmm. And I admired her, and... She made me laugh, and I really miss her.
Yeah.
I look over at that, you know, I'm driving the car, and I expect her to say, can we turn on the heated seats? Because that was her favorite thing about the
sure.
car. It was a big, like, it was the luxury option, and she would want to turn on the
my
heated
seats.
My
successful time in
August.
New York.
Well, no, it
but
was
in August?
It was her car. I mean, it would be like August, and she would be like, you know, can we turn on the heated seats? And
if I pay for this option, I'm going to use
exactly
it.
That's exactly right.
Exactly right. Your mother and I may
I'm not going to live forever.
I'm not going to live forever. Let me use the heated seat. Well, we've got to take a break for a commercial. We are having some fun. And, folks, if you want to read the book and if you want to hear George Hodgman in person, he'll be there Saturday, March 25th at 2 p.m. at the Quincy Public Library. The event is absolutely free of charge. And you'll learn about his life, experiences in his life, as well as experiences with his adult mother. We'll take a break. We'll be right back. Steve Winwood back in the high life again. The Quincy Public Library hosts best-selling author George Hodgman, and he wrote a book about his mother called Bettyville. Paris, Missouri. A lot of people would say there is no way you could have lived the exciting life of New York City and be happy at all in Paris, Missouri, and yet you still, is this your permanent home now, or you still go back and forth between the two?
Well, it's headquarters. I still have my apartment in New York, but I rent it out for long stretches. And I go some to New York. I don't feel drawn to go back to New York. Mm-hmm. But if I were in Paris all the time, I think it might drive me a little crazy.
Right. It's very intriguing. Another aspect of your story is that you happen to be a gay man. And I imagine that being gay in Paris, Missouri, when you were a teenager, was not something you went around and told a whole lot of people about, or am I wrong about that?
Didn't get a lot of dates. No, it was a...
Were you closeted? I mean, it was probably fair to say that...
Well, I was 18. You know, you're closeted. I mean, maybe, I don't know how it is now. I think kids are out when they're really young.
Mm-hmm.
But I was, I don't know what I was. I just wasn't something I was talking about yet.
Right.
Maybe
did
with myself.
Okay. Did your parents, when did your parents become aware of this difference, as some people like to say? And how did that go over?
I think it was kind of a creeping awareness over years. My parents were always good to me, and my parents were in many ways very accepting of me, but we just didn't really talk. There were a lot of things we didn't really talk about.
Right.
Or talk about very well. And that's one of the things the book is about, because it's a book about communication. And my mother's generation were not, you know, these were people that were happy if they had supper on the table and roof over their head.
Right.
And they weren't thinking about expressing their feelings.
Right. And nobody cares how you feel.
I know.
Just get out and row another hoe of corn. And put dinner on the table and do your duty and behave in an appropriate way. And everything will go along just fine.
Do your duty.
Do your duty. Absolutely. Well, my duty is to make sure that we end on time, and I could talk
to you
forever. You're very fun, too. And Katie Krauser, you didn't get a chance to say anything, but...
That's all right. I'm thrilled to be here.
And we're thrilled to have you here. And again, this is a great event on Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Quincy Public Library. Bettyville is the name of the book, and you will see yourself in all the pages of it, I am sure. And you'll maybe, if you are looking to be part of this in the future, you might want to get a little insight into what caring for parents will be all about.